Chapter 1. Where to Buy. The Story. Dipping My Toes. Those first few years after finishing high school and finally becoming free felt like a never-ending summer. I was young, happy, and I loved every minute of it. I spent most of my time hanging out with my friends, going to the beach, playing sports, traveling, throwing parties, and having constant fun. Probably a pretty normal life for a Swedish kid in their late teens and early 20s. But, unlike most others my age, I was also stuck with a weird obsession. I felt like I needed to buy a house before any of my friends did. All that fun meant I met a lot of interesting people and, even though I didn't realize it back then, some of them would end up influencing me so much that they more or less helped to form the rest of my life. Especially my friend Toby and his very wealthy businessman father. I remember being a bit intimidated by them, and I always struggled to feel like I was good enough to earn their time. However, since I loved their way of thinking and being, I still hung around as much as I could. It ended up being a lot. I had pretty much walked right into my own version of Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad, Poor Dad book series, and I loved it. Toby had big plans for himself and his life. So big, it initially scared me just to hear about them. But his way of dreaming, setting high goals and thinking positively, rubbed off on me. And as time went on, I started catching on to it all and dreaming a bit more boldly myself. These new influences helped me grow. And the more I grew, the more they started appreciating having me around. I learned a lot about myself and quickly realized that I would need to take a different path in life if I was to get what I wanted. Seeing Toby and his father firsthand, I soon came to the conclusion that a normal life and a normal job wouldn't cut it. I needed to be in business, just like they were. I needed to figure out a way to live off something scalable. The feeling was amazing. It was like a fresh ocean breeze through my body. I remember feeling less and less suffocated the more I realized I could actually take control of my situation and create the life I wanted. I really could. Just like Toby and his dad. His dad started with nothing, and his first job was hauling timber out of the woods with a horse. His dad now had factories, tons of real estate, and he built skyscrapers. I needed some of that, and it became very clear to me that I should get started building this new life of mine as soon as possible. I began by creating my own company through which I could do work for others and bill the hours. It wasn't fancy. The work I did was rough, but I was in control. I had a company of my own and I decided when I wanted to work. I was on my way. But it wasn't enough. I needed more. I needed to move faster. I wanted to prove to myself that I was ahead of the crowd, and I decided I wanted to do this by being the first among my friends to buy a house. Figuring out a way to afford a house without having to move too far away from my friends became a big challenge, and it took me a few months to come up with a solution. Most of my friends and I were all about hanging out where things were happening, where there was life, and where we got enough stimulation. This usually took us downtown, to the beaches, or to the high-rent district. These were three prime locations when it came to real estate in three areas way out of my budget. But I found a compromise that also taught me a lot about the best locations for the type of real estate investments I have been doing ever since. I grew up in a small town located on Sweden's west coast, and I think that little town is a good location for buying and holding houses. There was a big highway built in the 1990s that allowed us to go south or north along the coast. If you headed south, you would reach a city of approximately 65,000 people in just 30 minutes. And then 15 minutes north, a smaller town of 15,000 where I went to high school. After our graduation, most of my friends moved to one of those two cities, which meant I would probably have to do the same if I wanted to keep the social life I loved so much. I probably would have moved if it weren't for that obsession with buying my own house. I had no experience and no money. All I had at the time was a burning desire to own my own place, and that ended up being a stronger drive than that of keeping my social life alive. It was painful seeing all of my friends go, but I knew if I went with them, I would very likely get stuck spending all my money on rent like everybody else. That was not what I wanted. I wanted to get started on my dream life, and my plan was to do so by buying a house. The next few months gave me some much-needed time to explore my options. I visited banks to learn about potential financing. I went to see places that were for sale, and I talked to my parents about possibly borrowing some money from them. Luckily for me, I didn't get hold of much money, which gave me limited options. So limited that I almost gave up. I had no more than a few hundred dollars in my account, and I had just started my own company that didn't really do anything yet. The little money I made came from a few kind local farmers who would let me help them a few hours here and there, then bill those hours. Being in my early 20s and with a very marginal income, all I could seem to afford was a cottage far out in the woods. It was a hard pill to swallow, but I surprised myself by actually going out and exploring some of those cottages and being willing to move there if that was what it took for me to own a place. But it wasn't what I dreamed about. Not even close. I dreamed about owning a property in the city where all my friends could come hang out. A place to be. Not a lonely cottage an hour into the woods. The situation made me sad at the time, but the tight finances and my persistence has been a blessing in the long run. Months went by, and I kept on looking every day. I lived in a room I rented for $50 a month. It was an old and worn apartment in the outhouse of a family friend's farm, a great place for the time being, given I didn't want to spend any unnecessary money on rent. It was kind of tough, and my hopes kept going down until that blessed moment when I finally came across something better than those tiny cottages in the woods. Something much better. A small ad in the newspaper showed a little house that had been foreclosed on and was to be auctioned off a few weeks later. Unlike all the other places in that price range, this house was located a lot closer to where I grew up. It was a bargain compared to the other places I had seen in that area, and as long as it didn't end up going for much more than the auctioneer's estimated value, that house would be a great investment. I went to see it with my dad, and we both agreed it needed a lot of work. However, my dad said, "It seems to have good bones." He referred to the actual structure of the house, which we both thought seemed really good. A solid block house with an asbestos roof that looked to be in good condition. I suppose the farmers in us came out, and just as we would make sure our barns at home stood steady and didn't let any rain or water in, we figured similar qualities would make good bones on a house. As for the rest, it was a mess. Both the kitchen and the bathroom were disgusting. Most of the flooring was totaled, and all the inner walls needed holes repaired and paint. The windows were in really rough shape, and there was junk everywhere. But who cared about that? I had no problem hauling junk and painting if it meant I wouldn't have to move out to one of those dinky cottages deep in the dark woods. I actually really liked the location. Since I knew I couldn't afford to live downtown, this house gave me a chance to live along the roads that went between the two cities, so at least people could swing by and visit as they drove past. The big road outside the house used to be the main road before they built the new highway. I knew a lot of my friends would be passing by on a regular basis while going between the two cities or visiting their parents in our old hometown. That was good news, as it meant I might be less lonely than I thought. As the auction was still a few weeks away, I spent some time continuing my research. I would drive by in the day, by night, and then again in the morning. I tried to figure out what kind of neighbors I would get if I bought the house. Looked like pleasant ones. They were driving nice cars and they all seemed to take care of their properties. That was good. The only messy place was the one I wanted to buy. I craved getting it so that I could fix it. It was like a big eyesore among all the clean people living around it. My head was filled to the brim with this whole deal, and it felt like the day of the auction would never come. But it did. And when it did, I had convinced my father to join me and potentially loan me some money for the 10% down payment if we were to win. Buying my house at a live auction was one of the most exciting things I have ever experienced. Sitting there and competing with all those older and more seasoned investors, my heart was beating so fast it made me dizzy. I think all my emotional warning signals were going off at the same time, and I had not prepared for that kind of stress or excitement, or whatever it was. I was a kid competing with a bunch of old men, and I had no money. Even if my father helped me and the bank came through with the rest, how was I supposed to pay for all the renovations? I had less than 10% of the 10% down payment in my account. But I was determined. I was going to give it a go. I started thinking about my breathing, calmed myself down, and remembered my plan. A plan that was nothing more than a budget, my highest bid. An old strategy to avoid getting carried away and end up overpaying. I stuck with the estimated value they had put on it. I could pay that, but not more. Things went really well, and I ended up winning the auction and getting the house, and I got it for cheap. So cheap, in fact, that I managed to go right to my banker and convince him to give me 100% financing, which allowed me to give the initial 10% back to my father within a few days. It felt great. I was in my early 20s, and I had just purchased my first house. It might not have been located downtown, but it sure wasn't an hour into the woods either. I was very happy with my acquisition, and it was so inspiring to learn that, with a proper desire, dreams really could become reality. I remember the first times going over to the house being really special, and I will never forget the first task I undertook there. The previous owner was still living on the property, and I didn't want to upset them, so I gave them plenty of time to move out. Since I didn't have access to the house yet, I started cleaning the little barn that was located in the back. It was a separate building with a garage, a little workshop, and an attic. It still gives me warm and fuzzy feelings when thinking about the first little projects I got into. That feeling of having something of my own. The place was mine. I had a property. One in pretty good condition at that. Not the best location, not the cheapest location, but in the middle. And I've learned that the middle is a great place to be. Since the house was in rough shape, the next part of my life was all about restoring it and increasing its appeal. I did that with a lot of help from friends who would come by since it was so conveniently located. It took me several months to get the place in order, but I had fun doing it. I would put some music on and just keep at it. I cleaned and I spackled and I painted every day for the first few weeks. It felt good, and it was cheap. A few $100 really transformed the place. It got so nice that I felt confident enough to invite my banker, who was so impressed he gave me a bigger mortgage that would help me move forward with my renovations. The new mortgage was substantial enough for me to buy and install a used but really nice kitchen and to have handymen come in and renovate the bathroom, change all the windows, and put stucco on the exterior. Before I knew it, I had turned the worst house on the street into one of the best-looking places in the area. However, I had a home, which is far different from an investment, and even if I did well buying and fixing the house, I wasn't harvesting the benefits of being a real estate investor as long as I live there. Luckily, that changed after 2 years when I found a very similar deal 15 minutes further north. I decided to see if I could rent the first house in order to help finance the renovations of the new place. I could, and it did very well. Turns out, tenants loved the location and it was great for commuting. With the first house rented, I started making a passive income as I got more in rent than the costs of the loan, taxes, and maintenance. My house started paying me money without requiring any of my attention. It changed my life and got me on a path I'm still on today. Since the first house I bought was so conveniently located, finding good tenants was easy. As if that wasn't enough, I also found that those tenants were prepared to pay almost as much for my house as they would for a rental downtown. I couldn't believe it. They paid me almost the same rent as downtown, but I had only paid a fraction as much for my house compared to those in the city. What a win. How could this be? I did some research and found that there were state laws that regulated how much rent you were allowed to charge per square foot. This kept rents down in the most sought-after locations where real estate was very expensive. My research also led me to the conclusion that rents seem to be somewhat similar everywhere. What changes is the demand. If demand for rentals goes down, the first ones to lose their customers are the ones in less attractive areas, while the more popular and expensive areas rarely experience any vacancies at all. Renting my house for just a little less than downtown prices after paying a fraction of the price to buy it gave me the kind of dollar signs in my eyes you see in cartoons. I knew I was onto something, and the main thing I took away from the experience was that finding properties in these types of locations is a great way to maximize the profit from owning and renting houses. The story in numbers. I bought the house for $45,000 and I spent a total of $25,000 on renovations. I owned the house for 10 years and rented it for 8. Monthly income. Rental income equaled $700 the first 4 years, $750 the last 4 years. Average rent equaled $725. Vacancy loss equaled $0. The house was never vacant. Total income equaled $725 per month. Monthly expenses, cost of owning the house. Taxes equaled $60. Repairs and maintenance equaled $20, very minor since I renovated the whole house. Management fee equaled $0. I managed the property myself. Loan payments, 35 years at 4%, equaled $400. Total expenses equaled $480 per month. The house created a monthly profit of $725 minus $480, equaling $245, which equals a yearly profit of $2,940. The house stayed rented for 8 years, which brought in a total of $23,520. I then sold the house and used that money for bigger deals. The house sold for $110,000. Total income equaled $133,520. My investment was the $45,000 purchase price and the $4,000 I paid a realtor when I sold. That equals $74,000. Total income of $133,520 minus the total cost of $74,000 equaled $59,520 in profit. A final word on these numbers. I would like to introduce you to two new terms, cash flow and cash on cash return. Cash flow represents the amount of money you make from rental income after you have deducted the costs of owning the property. In this case, that means the cash flow is the $245 profit that the house yielded every month. Cash on cash return is the annual cash flow from a property in comparison to the amount of your own money invested. For the property above, that number was infinite as I used 100% bank financing and none of my own cash. The facts. Houses in good locations close to the center of popular cities are very expensive. A lot of investors never get started because they can't afford to buy a house where they live or want to live. Houses located far away from cities, public transport, and shopping are generally much cheaper. The problem with them is that not many people want to live there. The houses located in the middle, between the two areas mentioned above, are usually the safest investments. These include houses in suburbs or in fairly popular small towns. Houses in great locations historically have had the best appreciation. Houses in cheap locations have the best cash flow. Houses in the middle have a bit of both, which, over time, has made them an attractive investment for making income as an owner and also harvesting the fruit of inflating real estate prices. The risk of investing in the best location. Rents will, at best, cover your costs of financing if you need it, so profit will have to come from appreciation. Over time, appreciation has been a given, but there are still ups and downs. If you aren't making money from cash flow, tough times can easily put you out of business. The risk of failing increases significantly. The risk of investing in the cheapest location. Most cheap areas are cheap because people don't want to live there. As a result, it is very hard to find tenants. It can also be hard to sell the property and you risk getting stuck with a liability. A property that costs you money because you can neither rent nor sell it. The benefits of being in the middle. You start making money right away, thanks to a cash flow that covers all costs of owning and gives you a monthly profit. There are plenty of tenants. You will see a good appreciation over time, and you will have a much better chance of surviving down markets and tougher times. Here is how it looks in numbers. Ideally, you want to find houses in areas where the rental income can pay the house off in 10 years or fewer. You won't find that in the most expensive locations. If you live in New York, Stockholm, or London, start driving out of town until the numbers make sense. The return on investment should be at least 10%. If you live in Indianapolis, Indiana, or Scottsdale, Arizona, you might not have to drive as far. Statistically, it would look like this. Popular locations like San Francisco have seen their median house price rise from $300,000 in 1997 to $1.4 million in 2017. That means their average house increased by 8% per year in value. Very good. Their rents, however, haven't followed the same trend, and as a result, most people only get 3.4% of what they paid for the house back in rent every year. As most interest rates for anyone borrowing money usually hover at around 5%, you would actually lose 1.6% of the value you paid for the house every year you owned it. If you look closer at these numbers, you will find house prices increase more than the cost of the money you borrowed. You would have to be able to afford losing money while owning the property with a hope of then being able to sell for a profit later. This is a bit of a gamble. Now let's take a look at a less desirable location. The small rural town of Bengtsfors in Sweden has seen the median house price rise from $60,000 in 1997 to $80,000 in 2017. That means their average house price increased by 1.45% per year in value. Not very good. It's actually lower than the 2% average inflation. Inflation is a term used to describe the average increase in price for most consumer goods and services. And if you look at this with inflation in mind, these prices have actually gone down. You get less for $80,000 today than you would get for $60,000 some 20 years ago. The rent in Bengtsfors is better. It is marginally under the average rent for Sweden, which can result in some people getting close to 15% of what they paid for the house back in rent every year. The problem is finding someone to rent it to. The municipality is suffering from depopulation. There were 11,290 people living there in 1997. In 2017, that number was down to 9,900. That means a lot of vacant housing, which makes it very hard to find renters. If you can't find renters, you might have an empty house that you have to pay for every month without getting anything back. A way out could be to sell it, but the money made would be worth less than what you spent buying it. And that's if you got your house sold at all. A hard task in a depopulating town. For safe investments, look for areas in the middle. Avoid cities that are struggling with depopulation and avoid cities where the rent doesn't even cover the cost of a mortgage if you need one. Worst house on the best street. The neighborhood makes a difference. By the worst house on the best street is an old saying a lot of real estate investors use, and it works well. If you can buy a rough house and bring it up to an average standard for less money than buying one of the other houses on the street, you have very likely found yourself a great property. Before you invest in a neighborhood, you always want to do some investigation. Drive there during a workday, during the weekend, and late at night. Finding out what kind of people live in the neighborhood can save you from a lot of pain. Ideally, there are families with people working during the week and no gangs roaming the streets at night. The type of people you see living in the neighborhood will very likely be similar to the type of renters you attract. So look for areas with good, hardworking, and honest people. Look for neighborhoods where the people who live there take care of the properties, and where most cars seem to be gone during the day. That usually means people are working. If they have a job and take care of the properties, that often indicates responsibility. And that is what we look for in our renters. The reason this works is because like-minded people tend to be attracted to each other. Services and communications. Services like shopping, good schools, and grocery stores nearby make it a lot easier to find tenants. So do good communications like infrastructure to get you around. Closeness to bigger roads, bus lines, train stations, and places where people can work will make it easier to find good renters. Action items. Start looking. Look for properties online and start driving around. When you find properties, call a local realtor and ask what monthly rent you can expect for the place you are looking at. Multiply that rent by 12 to get your yearly rental income. Then, take away the expected cost of owning the place to get your yearly cash flow. Take your yearly cash flow and divide it by the money you will have to invest in the property to see how many years it will take to get your money back. Ideally, you want your money back in 10 years or fewer. My recommendation is that you buy a single-family home with a cash-on-cash return of at least 10%. In order to find that cash flow, you will have to go a little bit outside of the most popular locations. Just remember to be careful and avoid ending up too far away where nobody wants to live. In short, properties as central as possible without losing that 10% return.